Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Burntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
Come get some.
Beware,
IGN Game Scoop.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to IGN Game Scoop. I'm your host, Damon Hatfield. Joining me this week, Justin Davis, Scoop. Marty Sliva, Jared Petty.
Howdy.
Got a great show for you guys this week. Last week, I was in this place called Germany.
Deutschland.
Yep, Deutschland, the land of the Deutsches.
Wow.
Went there for this little show called Gamescom, and now I'm ready to report back on what I saw.
Tell us all about it.
Expound.
Yep. Here we go. We're going to talk about the best games I saw at Gamescom and some... the best news announcements, the most surprising announcements. Ooh. I think these are the gamey, the Damey Gameys here.
The old Damey Gameys.
Damey Gamey Awards. Let's start. Sony sat this one out.
Yeah.
Sort of like gave the spotlight to Microsoft. Yeah. And I thought they had a really strong showing.
Yeah, Microsoft really sort of took that opportunity and hit it off real hard right at the beginning.
Yeah, they did. It's really interesting. It's interesting to see the gamesmanship going on because people think Sony's going to have a lot to say later this year. Mm-hmm. It's like they ceded ground to Microsoft only to hopefully, you know, not hopefully, but, you know, to keep things interesting, they'll probably gobble some of it back later.
Yeah.
At the Paris Games Week, right? Yeah.
Well, yeah. And if they do another Sony experience here. Right.
So, they announced finally a release date for Quantum Break, showed some more footage of this, and announced the actors that are going to be involved in the game and the TV show.
Yep. So
remember, this is sort of a new multimedia experience.
Yeah, it's cool. I like the idea that the TV show is following the bad guys, right? It's sort of like highlighting the Littlefinger from... I almost said Littlefoot. That was Land Before Time.
I would play that game.
I wish Littlefoot.
Telltale Presents Land Before Time.
This game looks awesome.
Yeah. So... I think so. Sean Ashmore is our lead, and his brother has some sort of powers, but his brother ends up getting killed, and now he absorbs his brother's time manipulation powers.
Yeah,
so it's like a third person action game where you have time manipulation powers.
Yeah.
Sean Ashmore, Iceman from the X-Men, plays our hero here, and then the villain is Littlefinger from Game of Thrones.
Yep.
He was also the mayor in The Wire, and then
Oh my god.
Aidan Gillen, and then another actor from Dominic Monaghan is just in the game. He's not in the show. And then that guy.
Oh, Lance Reddick.
Yeah, Lance Reddick from Lost
and The Wire
and Fringe.
Also
and
The Wire. Yeah.
Is this just
also,
in The Wire?
I think the bellhop in John Wick.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
He is the bellhop in John Wick.
I did not get that movie.
Yeah.
You didn't get it?
I didn't get it. Everybody kept telling me how
good it was. About a dude who just kills everything.
I know. It was like, people were like, oh, this is so good. And I was like, no, it's kind of
John Wick. I just thought it was a fun action.
John Wick's great.
Yeah. I wanted to like John Wick.
Doesn't like John Wick. Doesn't like Banjo-Kazooie.
Doesn't like voice acting.
Doesn't like Game of Thrones anymore.
I like lots of other things.
You like Tandy Games?
I do like Tandy Games. I like Tandy Games a lot. I like Hard Boiled.
Quantum Break is out April 5th.
Yeah.
Next year. So we finally have... a release date on that one.
Damon, what do you think of this whole like TV show crossover thing? Like the last time I saw a game try to do this was with Defiance, where you had a pretty midland TV show and a terrible video game side by side. Now, obviously, it looks like a whole new degree of production is going into this game product. What do you think they're going to have to do right to make this work as a television program?
Well, so what I wonder is, you know, TV, well, anything. Good movies and good TV shows have good directors. Mm-hmm. So it's like, who did they get to direct this? They got good talent.
Yeah.
Who's directing this live action sequence?
I think that's important. What network is it on?
The thing. It's all on the game disc.
Ooh. Oh.
It's not something you watch on TV.
Yeah.
So you play a level of the game, it unlocks an episode of the show, and the episode's like 22 minutes.
Yeah.
Like a typical 30-minute show.
Yeah, weird, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that is weird.
You're playing the game, and then you watch the show with the bad guys. Play the game, watch the bad guys.
And we're getting more of that later on. Like, Telltale is doing that super show thing that we're not 100% sure what that is, but it seems like it's a game along with a TV show, and everything's weird.
And now, is it fair to speculate that eventually we're going to see this on one of the digital download platforms as something we can watch streaming? I mean, on Netflix or Hulu or something like that?
I mean, like on Netflix?
Yeah, eventually digital be download. Able to watch the show.
I don't
a year
see.
From now.
Well, it's hard to know.
It's not made to be cut together.
Yeah, I imagine. Maybe the show doesn't make any sense unless you've played those levels.
It picks up right where the level ends or something like that, and it won't even be standalone. Or maybe it will be standalone.
But don't they just call that a Metal Gear cutscene at that point? I mean, if it's just a really long. What? Yeah, but I mean, so were FMV game cutscenes.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's like Red Alert at that point.
Time will tell.
And yeah, but it's Red Alert with Lance Reddick.
Oh, hey, Red Alert had George Takei. That was
pretty rad. It did have George
So I guess we'll find out April 5th.
Yeah.
The game looks really cool. This is another game. This is a game that I was a little bit cool on when it was revealed, but the more they show off, the more impressed I am.
The developer has a great pedigree, Alan Wake and Max Payne.
I'm really excited about this.
Totes. Yeah.
Microsoft also showed us Crackdown for the first time in over a year. This one is also looking
loudy, really cool. Look at all these buildings blown up.
Yeah, so their big thing they were showing off is that in the multiplayer mode, the entire city can be destroyed.
Yep.
Oh, so
and will be.
Yeah, and will be. And they're using the cloud to compute all this extra destruction. Yeah.
Which I'm still skeptical as hell, but they actually showed it off. Like, they showed a version of, like, here's what it looks like if you're offline and not using the cloud, and here's what it looks like if you are online and you have, you know, this processing power being
The destruction with the cloud is just, like, stupidly impressive.
Yeah, it's great. Bring down entire buildings.
I mean, it has to, you know, it's confusing. Like, what if I'm on Wi-Fi? Is the destruction not going to be as cool as if I'm, you know, like, plugged in? Or what if I'm in a place what if my internet goes out? Or
there's a very real latency concern there, for sure. If they're streaming, you know, a significant amount of data to your Xbox One from some data center somewhere else in the world, will you get better performance based on your physical location if you have a lower ping to the server?
Yeah, well, certain people, like, there's certain just neighborhoods in San Francisco, like, if they're between two hills, like, Wi-Fi is just super spotty there.
Sure. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and that's always the issue with remote computing is your pipeline and your bandwidth that you're able to get in. I'm really interested in seeing this kind of Red Faction Guerrilla on a grand scale thing happen. Mm-hmm. I also love the fact that we saw a lot of things in the preview and we broke down where you see people inside the buildings and it looks like you're going to be able to move inside a lot of these structures. Mm-hmm. They look pretty bare bones within, but there's still all kinds of new tactical options that presents along with a destructible environment.
Oh, so I think it's really exciting. Up. I love this.
You know what else I saw in this trailer?
What did you see, buddy?
Orbs.
Orbs.
So many orbs.
Yeah. What if there's an orb in a building, or if there's an orb at the top of a building, you blow up the building? Is that orb just hanging out up there?
Well, but see, that destruction isn't in the single player mode because they have a story they're telling. If you destroyed the city, you wouldn't be able to tell.
I love the idea that you destroy a building. Like, well, you killed the boss. Good job, buddy.
Yeah. Here's the credits.
We're proud of you.
Yeah. You did it.
Yeah.
This actually reminds me of an idea I've had for a game for a long time. So I've had this idea, and then I think they're actually making the game. Kind of ahead of my mind. I thought it'd be cool to have a moderate-sized city, say, like San Francisco, and the point of the game is just to level the entire city.
Okay.
So you're turned loose in the city and, like, do whatever you need to to destroy the city in as short amount of time as possible.
I love all that.
Yeah. So, like, I think they must have like been tapping my dreams.
That's the obvious conclusion.
Your ideas went to the cloud.
Yeah, well,
and they grabbed them.
I gotta stop sending my ideas. I gotta turn that
feature in this game, were you a giant monster, a Godzilla, like, on your t-shirt?
No, you're just a human. So get to a gun store and start, get some explosives.
Yeah, get a dump truck and just drive through.
Bring some buildings down.
This sounds fun.
I like that. That'd be good.
It's like Blast Corp.
Still like to play that game. I finally got to play Rise of the Tomb Raider. Tomb Raider Rise. And I finally actually got to raid a tomb.
Oh.
You raided the heck
out of it. That's real.
Yeah. That was a really good article, by the way.
Thank you.
Enjoyed that.
It's been a long time since I'd written a preview, so I'm glad
that was really well done.
Yeah.
It's like riding a bike, you know?
Yeah.
You're going to be 20 years from now, you're going to get called out of retirement. David.
When they reboot Tomb Raider again. Yeah. You can tell me that again.
What's the think?
Super fun.
Yeah.
This is the area I played in, she's in Syria. Mm-hmm. She's been led there. She has these voice recordings from her father, and they lead her to Syria to find this tomb. And I played some, you know, there's a bunch of puzzles, a bunch of physics-based water puzzles, just like in the first game. And there's a new mechanic where she can actually learn foreign languages. Like, you'll encounter Greek etchings on the wall and she can't read them, but if you examine nearby objects, she's like, she learns Greek somehow.
Oh, wow.
And can level up her language proficiency. She can read the Greek and it'll point her to, like, where her treasure is.
I like that. I like that.
I
also like that, like, I mean, we know, like, the combat's going to be cool and everything, but I like that there's this stuff, too. I'm hoping that the game is, like, a cool mix that, like, anytime you might start getting sick of one element, it'll throw you.
It definitely seems like they're emphasizing puzzles in this one. I'm sure you're going to talk about Deus Ex later. Like, that game's doing the opposite, where they really nailed the stealth and hacking trees, so they're bolstering the combat.
Yeah.
And the first Tomb Raider really, really nailed the combat, and so now they're kind of bolstering the puzzles.
Yeah, big fan. Oh, yeah. It looks pretty. I'm also glad that it's it's a much different looking setting than the snow stuff we've seen.
Yeah. I was worried, like you were, I've heard you say this before, that if that entire game was in some snowy, frigid environment, I don't know how I would have felt about that.
Yeah, I think the glow popping is going to work good because you had that more narrow environment in the first game, and the ability to go to all these exotic places. That's part of the appeal of an Indiana Jones stuff. style adventure movie, which is what Tomb Raider does best when, it's, when it's shooting on all cylinders.
Excuse me, I think it's called an Uncharted style adventure.
Anyway, I really enjoyed Rise of the Tomb Raider. That one's out November 10th, same day, of course, as Fallout 4.
There's some real good Xbox games coming out.
Yeah, it's true. You still think they're gonna
I still think Tomb Raider's gonna be delayed.
Yeah, that's what I keep saying.
We're getting real close to that.
That's true. We're getting November 9th. Mm-hmm. Oh, they're not doing it.
Yep.
We got to see more of Mirror's Edge.
Oh yeah.
Catalyst. And I found out, maybe, tell me if this is news to you guys, this is a full reboot. This is not a prequel.
We actually got that, I think, in the live show segment. They mentioned that this is a, they said reboot, sort of.
I thought this was a prequel to the previous game, but they said, they're ignoring, like, obviously, it takes, they're telling the origin story of Faith and ignoring, they're not assuming that the events of the first game are going to happen.
Which is very interesting.
I mean, it's kind of, so it's not a reboot in the sense that it's not retelling the same story. Like, it is a different story, but it's kind of like, well, just look, like, just, it's the same character in City, but just the rest, just toss it out.
Yeah, totally. I don't remember
the story. I think that's fine. Yeah, I like that game a lot, but I don't remember the story.
No, and this, the game looks super pretty. I'm glad, again, that they're really emphasizing non-combat.
Yeah.
Because every time you got a gun in Mirror's Edge, the game slowed down and got kind of
Well, you know, in this one, you can't even pick up a gun.
Big fan of that.
They're just...
Big fan of that.
Good. Yeah.
Totally.
It looks pretty.
Forcing you to things. Just...
I hope you don't spend too much time inside. That was a little bit weird. I mean, I know it's just a gameplay demo.
And maybe that's just because it's easier to do indoor environments than outdoor.
I mean, it's just a demo they're choosing to show. Like, it's not really indifferent than anything else, but I hope it's not too indicative of the finished product.
Yeah.
I thought Mirror's Edge was at its best when it let you sort of stretch your wings and really go a little bit crazy with
the environment. She didn't have one. She was a human, not a bird.
She was an Icarus.
You fly too close to the sun?
That one's early next year. I don't know if there's an exact date.
It's February.
For that, but
February
or something.
February. Yeah. Man, we already have like a rough view of what the first quarter is like, and it's huge. And then Q1. We don't even have like one's Uncharted coming out and stuff like that.
Q1 and Q2 are the new Q4.
Q1 and Q2, Justin.
Wow.
You know, another game. I was impressed with it at E3, and then I saw it again at Gamescom, and it's. I'm so stoked to play this game, Divinity: Original Sin, Enhanced Edition.
Yep.
This is the one. It's coming to consoles as well.
They just announced the sequel too.
And they just announced Divinity: Original Sin 2.
Wait a minute.
Yeah.
Divinity. What's the opposite of original?
Stolen? No, wait.
Yeah, I don't know. Plagiarized?
Unoriginal.
Unoriginal.
This is an old school style RPG, Baldur's Gate style, and that they've they're adapting the controls for PlayStation 4, Xbox One. And I am amazed by how much detail there is in the game, and just the options that the player has, the incredible variety of ways you can approach problem solving.
You played the game on PC, right?
So the one that I was really into was Pillars of Eternity, which is a similar isometric RPG. This one's a little bit more modern in the sense that it's not pre-rendered backgrounds, it's actually like polygonal, so you can swing the camera around, and... it's not sandbox, but it's a little bit more open in the sense that, like, you can drag, like, TNT over to a boss and then ignite it and do damage to it that way. So you have, it's a little bit less canned than a game like Pillars, which is much more traditional like Baldur's Gate.
There's been kind of a resurgence of these games, almost a renaissance.
Between
Pillars and this.
Shadowrun.
Wasteland 2.
It's great. And, everything old is new
The new
again.
D&D game that's coming out, Stormcast.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that in a second.
Yeah, I'm really glad this is coming to console. Oddly, I think it'll work.
Like, I mean, it's...
You know, you don't have that many skills active at any one time, so I feel like it's going to work on a... My PC actually played Pillars just fine, but it couldn't run Divinity very well. I just don't know if it was an optimization issue.
There's definitely obviously we had that wealth of RPGs in terms of Dragon Age and Witcher coming out like 6 months apart from each other, but like there isn't really anything huge on the horizon until maybe like Final Fantasy comes out. So this is, you know.
I mean, I'm just glad to see, like, they're both huge games, both when I say
and
both.
This is I want to point, this is very different, a different type of RPG than Dragon Age or Witcher.
Yeah, true.
Well, that's what I was going to say. It's like Dragon Age is huge, Witcher is huge, and Divinity is also huge, but it's like its size comes in a different vector, I guess, than a game like The Witcher.
It's immersive in an entirely different way.
Yeah.
And what they're doing here is they've got this awesome local cooperative split screen. experience that I would have loved to have had when I was a kid with my friends. So you have several members in your party, and then your friend can just jump into the game at any moment and take control of one of your characters.
I love that.
And then if you guys go apart, it just goes into split screen, and you can both go off into the world and do whatever you want and complete different missions.
I love that.
I used to dream when I was playing Secret of Mana that that would happen. Like, if we got far enough apart, the screen would split, and now
it's
somebody's
so like, crazy.
LEGO games. We're, LEGO games.
And then, you know, you're in a boss fight. When you go into a boss fight, it becomes turn-based, and the boss was way OP, so when we were just playing single player, he left, he took one of his characters and like, or he switched to a different character that wasn't in our boss fight, and we went into, we went and found the like wizard that had invented this boss and like figured out the weak spot of the boss by talking to the wizard, and
that's
then we were
so
able
good.
To jump back into the boss fight and beat him.
Yeah, that's awesome. Really cool.
Great.
I love that. I love that.
We, Divinity is a big Kickstarter success story.
Yeah. And so yeah, the sequel is launching on Kickstarter later this month.
Yep.
The Enhanced Edition's out on PC and console in October, I believe. So that one's really cool. And then, Jared, you mentioned Sword Coast Legends.
Mm-hmm.
This is another sort of old-school-style top-down RPG that looks really cool. This is a Dungeons & Dragons game.
Right, yeah. This is a licensed D&D product. It's got some really neat multiplayer stuff they've showed off where people are going to have the ability to create their own quests and share those out with others. But there's also just looking at what goes on in the single-player gameplay. It's pretty amazing. I saw some demo work on this, and it's just a really neat Baldur's Gate-style game. I don't know how it's going to come together, but everything I've seen in preview has been very exciting.
Well, the hook here is that one player gets to be Dungeon Master.
Right.
It actually plans out the dungeon, and it can even interact with it while you're playing.
And as a matter of fact, watching that dynamic interaction is what makes this really exciting, because the DM can just sit there and plan insidious things and then improvise as the players solve the puzzle, like, oh, they figured that out. Well, let me drop this on them. But at the same time, there's also a lot of incentive to provide positive feedback for the players. It's not just about trolling them. It's about creating an experience that's challenging, but also exciting and enjoyable for them, and the rewards for doing kind of both those things.
Mm-hmm. Very cool.
The last time I saw Sword Coast Legends, it wasn't clear to me. I actually don't know if they've answered this question since, about how much is it a video game and how much is it a set of digital tools for, you know, playing a game of D&D?
Sure.
Because, you know, you do have that Dungeon Master sort of pulling the strings, and they just have a bunch of tools at their disposal to sort of send their party through, or is it going to feel, you know, more Baldur's Gate, feel more traditional? And it was a little bit unclear. So, I don't know.
It seems to me that the emphasis is really on DMs creating scenarios for you to play.
Yeah, I don't know
and
how
you can,
I feel about that
you can
part,
create them. You can create your scenario offline, you know, pre-build it, and then just hand it over for people, upload it for other people to download.
Cool
and play.
If they have really nice like sharing tools, you know, to sort and view, you know, quests of different levels and different, you know, difficulty levels.
Yeah, it's always important for user-created content just to have an ability to find the good stuff. But I think they've talked about. It's been a little while since I've read about this and looked at it, but if I remember right, there's going to be some incentives also for, you know, say, ranking good DMs. Or
sure.
Exactly,
good,
yeah.
Good
players can rank your levels, rank you as a DM. So if you're just griefing them all the time and it's not fun, then they'll give you a poor ranking.
Yeah.
Sounds great.
That one's also coming to consoles later this year. A game I'm cautiously optimistic about is Scalebound. Because I think I like a lot of what this game is doing, and I'm a big fan, of course, of kaiju and giant monsters.
Yeah.
So that part of it I like. I'm not crazy about our character that we play.
Yeah.
I think he's
Drew?
He's a little, I don't know.
He reminds me of the dude from No More Heroes, where it's it's like, oh, he's annoying.
But Travis Touchdown?
Travis Touchdown. But,
but he was meant to be that way, at least.
Yeah, but I don't know, this looks cool. I like the look of the game. I like the colorful nature of it. Everything they've said about your dragon buddy, your monster buddies, just seems like really impressive in terms of like that AI, like how well, like you can sort of try to have it act one way, but it is this like, you know, real AI that will act the way, I was about to say act the way a real dragon would.
Sounds like the original working title for this game was Dragon Buddies.
Yeah. Oh, really? Dragon Buddies.
Is there any indication at all that a friend would be able to jump in and control the dragon? Like cooperative?
I don't think the dragon. There is a four-player cooperative mode, but I think everyone's going to have their own dragon.
I've heard about that. I was just like, I want to team up with a partner. I want my partner to be the dragon and me to be a little dragony guy and work together that way.
I mean, it really, Marty's exactly right that what's going to make or break this game is how that interaction with the dragon feels. And is he just going to be able to? They actually talk about this a lot in Halo 5 as well. You don't want your AI-controlled buddy to be too powerful and just wreck everything without your help.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But you also don't want him to feel useless or weak. And that balancing act is really challenging, I have to imagine.
Yeah. And Platinum has a pretty great track record. Like if you've
everything
that
worked out
is incredible. Like, yeah, I'm. This makes me seeing Drew as a little dude and then seeing a bunch of dragons fight.
Yeah.
Makes me just want a Pokemon game like that.
Ooh,
I want my dragon buddy to be a Charizard.
Oh,
Or Snorlax, that's that sleepy one.
Pokebounds.
I'm still holding out for the Pokemon MMO.
Yeah. That's,
why doesn't that happen?
Keep holding.
So this could be really cool. I don't know. This is their first, this is Platinum's first action RPG. And yeah. I think pretty much any type of game is made better by adding RPG elements. Yeah. So. Mm-hmm. It could be really cool.
It's a very, very pretty game.
Yeah.
Which it's kind of a trite thing to say, because like, what AAA games aren't very pretty anymore. But I mean, I don't know what other people expected. I didn't expect it to be that gorgeous.
Yeah, but keep checking back all month, because it's our IGN first.
That's
true. A lot of new stuff coming.
That's true.
Boom.
So those are games that caught my eye. You mentioned Deus Ex. I think that game looks cool, but they weren't really showing much new at the show.
Yeah. That's the only reason why. Yeah, they saw at
E3. Yeah, they showed the same level they showed at E3, just approaching it in a more stealthy way. So that's all. I thought the announcement I was most excited about the show was Halo Wars 2.
Yeah,
that was that's
very cool. Left field.
Yeah,
like, we didn't really. I mean,
the first Creative Assembly this time.
The first game was very good.
Yeah,
but I don't know how well it sold.
I don't think it sold.
Well, I have a theory that Halo Wars is one of those games that a lot of people are like, yeah, I loved Halo Wars, and they thought they were the only one. But it turns out there's just people all over the place that...
It was like a Ubisoft press conference. The camera zooms out, and it turns out everyone...
Everyone loved Halo Wars.
Well, Halo Wars...
Like, RTS on console is really, really hard to do, and it might be the best one.
Yeah.
Like, I was thinking about it. I'm like, what really nailed it better than that?
Very, very few things. I mean, Halo Wars takes into account the controls, which are the big obstacle with playing on a home console, and also the size and number of units you can select at a time. A lot of people just try to shoehorn a PC RTS with mouse controls onto a television. It doesn't work. Halo Wars approached that in some very smart ways before. I think they'll be even smarter about it this time with the second time around. But yeah, I mean, other than Halo Wars and something like Herzog's Vi, I can't think of any other places where StarCraft 64.
That's the one.
Actually, StarCraft 64
is really good.
No, I thought it was. That was the first time we played StarCraft.
It's really good.
Isn't there an Ogre Battle RTS on N64? Am I making that up?
There's a lot of RTSs, and the StarCraft 64
RTS. That's how I remember it, but maybe I'm wrong.
I feel like it had RTS elements.
It's content rich. I think Pikmin does it better than almost anybody. Pikmin is really an RTS game that's been adapted to console.
Pikmin's really good.
That's true.
Yeah, I'm really excited for Halo Wars 2. Sad Ensemble's not doing it, but Creative Assembly, the Total War developers, have a fantastic
pedigree. Do you think it's going to be real spooky, like Alien Isolation?
I do not.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
I thought there were two very surprising announcements from the show. One was that Nolan North is replacing Peter Dinklage in Destiny.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's a little bit... Is that scandalous? I mean, no, because when Destiny was released, everyone was like, God, Dinklage's VO is garbage.
Yep, it was really bad.
Yeah, it's Bungie's handling it in a very diplomatic way, saying, like, listen, like, this is a very important character going forward, and this Peter Dinklage is obviously has Game of Thrones and things like Pixels.
Pixels 2.
Pixels 2. God, I don't think we're going to get a Pixels 2. Yeah, and so they're like, well, Nolan North is probably, in terms of video game, much easier to get for future things.
They're positioning it very much as an availability.
Yeah.
Like, we need a lot of Ghost VO, and Nolan North does this day in, day out.
But it is insane that, like, once you download this update, is Peter Dinklage's Destiny going to become a thing that's, like, hard to find?
Yeah,
like,
don't update your Destiny if you want Dinklage.
Yeah.
Yeah, we have a video on IGN, the original That Wizard Came to the Moon. I think we preserved that for posterity way back during the alpha.
It does.
We still have that, but... Oh, go ahead, Justin.
No, go ahead.
But, actors give bad performances sometimes, even great actors. I mean, nobody's going to argue Peter Dinklage can't act. He's just superb, but that's a pretty terrible voice performance in Destiny.
Yeah, I mean, it just sounds like he was sleepwalking his way through it.
I mean, I have a personal interest. I've been meaning to write a feature about this for a long time, just about the preservation of games. And it's interesting that there's this thing that millions of people played that's just going to be gone. Mm-hmm. And that's just weird to me. Like, it kind of weirds me out that, like, it doesn't necessarily make me sad. Like, I don't think it's bad. I can't quite put my finger on why it feels weird. I guess it's like, so when George Lucas tinkers with Star Wars, you can still get and find, like, you still have your tape. You can't mess with that.
Yeah.
But now if you have the Destiny disc, they can mess with that.
It's like replacing the voice of Snake in Metal Gear Solid with Kiefer Sutherland. But the old games are still using the old voice actor, but now it's just like...
Another example is
you won't be able to play Destiny with Peter Dinklage.
Yeah. When they released World of Warcraft Cataclysm, or Cataclysm, as it's called in some circles, the original vanilla World of Warcraft was gone. Like, it's completely gone, and that's like what so many people spent 1,000 hours in. And like, it just feels like there doesn't seem to be any interest in preserving games in the way that there's an interest in preserving film or other media.
Yeah, it's not nearly as widespread. Now, there are groups right now fighting for the right to do the necessary mods so that they can do things like preserve MMOs or games that are, not really MMOs, games that are server-dependent in general, that have gone offline by creating emulated or simulated servers.
Yeah.
But sometimes the modifications you have to do to make that happen are illegal.
Technically illegal.
Yeah, right. So there are groups right now fighting for those rights. I think that the interest is there, but the message isn't out. It's not widespread.
Yeah.
So it needs the support of viewers like you.
Is one of those groups ISIS?
No, one of those groups is not.
But, oh, yeah. I'm not sure who ISIS
is. I think the EFF is helping out with one of the cases, if I
WWE.
Remember right. There's some other things I read about. No, this
FIFA?
The other announcement that surprised me from the show is that Tony Hawk 5 switched up the art style.
Like, that game comes out pretty soon. Yeah. That game comes out like a month.
Next month? Yeah.
Pulling a Borderlands.
Yeah,
actually. So it switched to this cel-shaded art style. I'm sorry to say I don't have a very strong feeling about that game.
Yeah.
And one of the things, you know, when we first saw it, one of the things I heard people saying was that it didn't look very good.
Yeah.
So the developer must have just been like, this is their way of fixing the graphics.
Yeah.
Make it cartoonish.
I haven't had a chance to go hands on with it.
Yeah.
I'm a huge fan of Tony Hawk, especially 1 through 4. And so I'm curious. I think I'm on the review, and so if it plays well, I can get over any visual stuff.
To be fair, I do think this new style looks better than it did before.
Yeah, I agree.
It looks. I mean, the problem as of now, again, I haven't played it either. So maybe when it's in your hands, it'll feel better. But it looks slow. Like Tony Hawk 1 through 4 were not slow. They were pretty fast playing games, and this just looks kind of slow.
Sloney Hawk.
I'm entirely. My only interest is whether I can play as Wolverine and Darth Maul. Everything else is secondary.
Almost certainly not.
Definitely not Darth Maul.
Not Darth Maul, but maybe I think you can play as Captain Phasma now.
Oh, yeah. Captain Phasma. There we go. Okay. I'm going to do some Gwendolyn Christie skateboarding. I'm good with that. There's an article.
Does she have a weird arm?
You know what? Never mind. She has weird hands.
Okay.
She has strange hands.
That's sexist. The most vague announcement of the show was that Final Fantasy XV is going to be borrowing some sort of tech from Just Cause 3.
Yeah, and it may or may not be the tech that, in order for them to implement airships into the game, possibly after the game is released,
they might have post-release
airships.
So, post-release airships. It's my second favorite kind of airship.
Both these games are Square Enix games.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, somehow, is it Tabata-san from Final Fantasy XV? He saw something he liked in Just Cause 3 and wants to use it in Final Fantasy XV. He told me it might have something to do with the verticality of
Maybe it's going to become a physics-based grappler. They're just going to drop all the RPG mechanics. It's all going to be about picking up chocobos and
they
swinging
them
around.
They wanted to tell us this, but then that's all that they said.
What if Rico was in, what if you could play a game in another game? Like, you were Rico in Just Cause, but you're in the world of Final Fantasy XV.
Oh, I'd love that.
You like that?
Cool.
Yeah, absolutely.
Awesome.
Or like, I want to climb that big summon guy.
Flip it around the other guy. Be the Final Fantasy XV guy in Just Cause.
Be those four boys who go camping and kiss each other.
Yeah.
And go to Just Cause Island.
The kissing is implied, Marty.
Yeah.
It's not explicit.
Not in here. It's not.
Do wake up with fabulous hair from that Coleman tent. Every morning, just perfect hair.
And it is literally a Coleman tent.
Yeah.
It's insane.
I love that. All their camping gear is Coleman branded. Mm-hmm. It's really. And Coleman makes good stuff.
All right, that's a wrap up.
Sponsored by Coleman.
That's a wrap up of Gamescom 2015. Pretty good show this year.
Yeah.
Pretty good.
Pretty
good lineup
pretty
good. Of games this year. Let's check in with the listener.
Hey, listeners.
Hi.
Listeners, remember you can always reach us at the email address, gamescoop@ign.com, just like Dave Murphy did.
Good job, Dave.
Hi, Dave.
Good old DM.
Speaking of Gamescom and game trade shows, do you think there will ever be a public games trade show that surpasses E3 in scale or importance? Do you think this would cause a change in E3 and its industry-only policies?
So he didn't say U.S., so I'm going to say yes, and it's called Gamescom.
That's what I'm going to say. What does he mean by scale and importance?
I mean, Gamescom.
Dave,
has,
what do you mean by this?
Yeah, Gamescom
Dave,
is like
if
more
Murphy's
than four times
real
as big as E3.
Yeah, I mean,
in terms of
again, it's called Gamescom.
Like
yeah,
350,000 people go to Gamescom. E3 is like 50,000.
Yeah,
so. But now, I would argue that the game announcements are bigger at E3.
Yeah,
so,
Gamescom has been growing, though, definitely. Like, I mean, since I've been in the industry in the last 5 years or so, like, Gamescom has continued to become more and more important.
Yep.
In terms of stateside stuff, there's nothing close yet to E3.
To E3.
Yeah.
I mean, there's stuff getting close attendance-wise, but that's because they're open to the public. It's kind of a cheat. Yeah,
yeah, PAX has more people than E3 does.
But they don't do as big of announcements.
No, not at all. Yeah.
And Sony's decision not to go to Gamescom this year, I don't know what that bodes for the future, what's going to happen next year. Because having the big three there is you know, one of the most exciting things about E3. Everybody's presenting something really exciting. You've got all three of the hardware manufacturers, and you've got most of the major software developers.
It really is. I mean, it's very dependent on timing. When I just started in this industry, E3 was always early May. And then they pushed it back. It was in July a few times, and now they've sort of settled in the middle there in June. Gamescom is a really, really good time to announce games. Mm-hmm. You know, you have your demo ready, you have everything ready to go. E3 can be kind of tough to get it all ready to go by that time.
Yeah.
So I don't know, but E3 can also be a good time to release like what's happening in this back half, like pull a Fallout 4.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's strange that culturally, the fact that, you know, that Americans and Europeans give gifts at Christmas and Japanese give gifts at New Year's has such an effect on the cycle of development in all the major markets.
Yeah. Well, except that the Japanese console market isn't what it used to be.
No, it's not. It is much less important than it once was. But it still affects the development cycle for people like Nintendo in particular. I mean, they're still very interesting.
I mean, Nintendo's a weird one, too, because E3 is pretty much the only show that they really focus on. Because the rest of the year, they just do directs and sort of announce things on their own schedule. And I sort of see that as a trend going forward that companies are going to start doing that.
I mean, in answer to good old DM's question, I would expect it. Here's what I think my prediction is, that E3 will be like Gamescom and add a public fourth or fifth day.
You think that'll happen?
Yeah. I do. I think it'll be press only or, you know, industry only for the first 2 to 3 days, and they'll tack on a couple of public days.
Public days at Gamescom and Tokyo Game Show are terrifying.
Yeah. TGS public days, it's like a miasma of human beings, just like this still flow. Yes, and I imagine Gamescom's very similar.
It sounds great.
Still flow?
Still flow.
I went to my doctor and said, I have a still flow.
It's a clogged drain of human beings. It really is.
Yeah, pretty much.
At least everyone's polite in Japan. That helps.
This is Nathan Jester.
Hey, Nathan.
He's talking about game collections.
Oh.
So the Rare Replay.
Yeah.
Ah.
The Orange Box.
Yeah.
Super Mario All-Stars.
Yeah. All great things.
Metroid Prime Trilogy. Yeah. He says,
goodness.
Which is best?
Jesus.
Which is most important?
What?
Which is your favorite?
Nope.
Of that list?
Yeah.
I don't even know where to start.
Best is Mario All-Stars, because Mario World is one of Mario the greatest
World,
games.
What all is in All-Stars? It's just 1, 2, 3,
and World.
It's in World?
Well, 1, 2, 3, World, and Lost Levels.
There's a version of All-Stars that doesn't have World.
Yeah, the original version doesn't have World, but then they updated a version.
And the version of World in that collection is slightly different than the version of World that originally shipped with the SNES.
One, Luiji slides on his stomach.
Yeah.
We looked this up one time.
Yeah.
I mean, pound for pound, in terms of what has the best games ever made, I mean, it's All-Stars. Like, World and 3 are just two of the greatest games of all time. None of the other collections have two of the greatest games of all time.
Argue Portal and Half-Life 2.
You say no other collection has two of the greatest games of all time, but Orange Box has Half-Life 2.
Sure.
And Portal.
Yeah, and Orange Box is pretty spectacular, though. I'm going to fess up. I love Half-Life 2, but I barely touched it after I discovered Portal. Like, I was like, wow, this is night and day. They're both incredible games, but Portal was just so good, I couldn't put it down.
But
going back to Mario All-Stars, not only is it one of the earliest examples of a good compilation, and not only is it contained several of the best games ever made, it's also a great example of a early remake that actually made games as good or better.
Because
those games were redecorated for the Super Nintendo. Super Mario 1, 2, 3, and Lost Levels were all updated to look and sound more like Super Nintendo games. And it's usually when you try to do that, you screw a game up. Instead, they produced superb versions of those games. I really do think that's kind of the gold standard by which these games can be measured. Now, I am interested. Mega Man Legacy Collection's coming out, you know, in a couple of weeks.
I'm stoked for that one.
And that in addition to some really neat versions of games, we don't know how it's going to turn out yet, but we have seen a lot of the museum stuff. That tries to contextualize some of the collected stuff.
Rare Replay did really good with that, too.
Rare Replay is, I'm so impressed.
Yeah, the sort that's of the window dressing, and then the actual, like, in-depth, behind the scenes videos and everything.
They went so far above and beyond. For 30 games for $30, I was expecting, here's 30 games.
Mm-hmm.
But the wrapping that it's in, where they have, you know, NES Remix style challenges, where complete these five, you know, little bite-sized challenges in Battletoads and whatever. The fact that in the retro games you can rewind at any time for the previous 10 seconds and replay Battletoads and actually get through it. the sort of what would you call it, like theater or like
theatrical presentation.
Yeah, the presentation of it, how it's all like this stage display with like curtains opening and closing. Like I wasn't expecting any of that. That's so above and beyond. Like it opens with like a song and dance number that's all about Rare games. Like,
also, the first time you boot it up, your house gets actually haunted by a ghoulie from Rare by the Ghoulies.
Yeah, I got this ghoulie I can't get rid of. I'm actually playing Rare Replay.
You saw it. You got a ghoulie you can't get rid of.
Yeah, Rare Replay in a lot of ways gets it as does it about as well as some of the compilations by M2 and Japan, which really are kind of the gold standard for this sort of thing, where they provide every possible imaginable version of these games and details around those to explain what they meant. Rare Replay has a kind of TLC to a lot of what you see there. And
Waterfalls.
I met 800 jiggies in Banjo-Kazooie.
Congrats, man.
How many are there total?
900.
Oh, there you go.
No, not 900 jiggies.
Or excuse me, 900 notes. Yeah, 80 some notes.
God, are there 900 jiggies in that game?
Oh.
I'd be dead. Also, we didn't mention Metroid Prime Trilogy because Metroid Prime is the most overrated Nintendo game of all time.
Oh.
There has to be a most overrated one, and it's that.
Go. That's the most overrated Nintendo game of all time?
Yep. No, the answer is not Kingdom Country.
No, the answer is Twilight Princess.
No.
That is factually untrue.
Oh, okay.
I'm tearing this family apart.
I was just telling Marty we were doing features on Metal Gear leading up to the release of Metal Gear Solid 5, and I only played Solid. I didn't play 2, 3, or 4. And like you just can't. I don't have a PS3 anymore, and so I literally can't buy them.
You can't. They're not available for PS4.
Nope.
No.
So it's like they re-released. What are they called? Well, I don't even remember what the collection's called.
Legacy Collection.
Yeah. Like they have Legacy Collection on PS3, so it's like great. You can play these Metal Gear games you missed, but now that's not on PS4.
You
so can, like
you just subscribe to PS Now.
But it just becomes strange when the re-releases are on one console back. Yeah. So it's like, do they need to be re-released again? Or like, I don't even know what the solution is. Like, it just annoys me that I can't play Metal Gear Solid 3.
You are so right about that. I mean, there's a collection, the Taito's Memory Collection for the PS2.
Exactly.
4 volumes of some of the just most wonderful, difficult to find video games, all available, and you can't play them now. You just can't play them. Unless you've got a PS3 with a PS2 emotion chip in it sticking around your house. It's like, it's really frustrating.
I'd love to see just more collections in general. You know, I why can't we get another edition of Mario All-Stars that includes, you know, Mario 64 and Galaxy,
Sunshine
2, Sunshine. Mm-hmm. Can you imagine?
Yes.
Because they'll sell them all for $10 or $15 individually. That's why.
Yeah. All right, moving on. This is KB in Miami.
Hi, KB. KB in Miami sounds like a weird morning show.
Kilobyte.
Welcome to KB in Miami.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, there we go.
If I'm not mistaken, all of you own both a PS4 and Xbox One.
That's correct.
Is KB mistaken?
KB's mistaken. I don't own an Xbox One. I just steal one from work when I want to play games.
Mm. Classic fanboy. You're sitting on your phone. That's weird.
Anyway, he says...
Wait, I stick it under here all the time.
PS4 already offers 4 free PlayStation Plus games monthly, and with the recent announcement that the 2 free XBLA games with gold for the 360 will also be playable on the Xbox One with backwards compatibility, that also makes 4 per month on Xbox One. Mm-hmm. With KB so far?
Yep.
That's a total of 8 games a month,
completely
8 free
lost.
Games a month if you have both systems, not counting whatever you buy on top of that. So he wants to know, how do we make time? How do we choose what to play? He says, my approach is to sample everything, but I legitimately don't have the time to play them all to completion. How do you guys choose? Do you put less value on the free games and thus don't feel bad about skipping a couple if they don't appeal to you right away? Mm. No, like I love that stuff. Right now I'm playing Lara Croft in the Temple of Osiris, and I'm playing Limbo again, because they're both free on PS4 this month. And then I've still got my big AAA Batman that I'm playing.
Sure, here we go.
KB, I think my opinion is that you're kind of overthinking it a little bit. Mm. I have Arkham Knight, and maybe I should feel guilty about not playing it, but like I just play, like I want to play Banjo-Kazooie, so I'm playing Banjo-Kazooie. Does it matter that it's years old or that I've played it in the past? Like, I go home and I have fun with that game every night, and like, that's what I'm drawn to. Like, my heart is saying Banjo-Kazooie, and my rational brain might say, nah, play Batman instead, but it's like, I don't want to play Batman. I think I'm done with Batman.
Yeah, like, I've definitely, I think over the past 5 years, I've definitely got out of that mindset of, like, I have to play everything to completion, and I must play everything I own. And I'm like, we all have really limited free time, and so just, like, play what appeals to us. And maybe that means replaying it. I'm replaying Sound Shapes and Limbo because they're both free on PlayStation Plus.
Play Civ 5 for 1,000 hours.
Yeah, exactly.
Play whatever you want.
Yeah.
A lot of it for me is just, does it work on Vita? It's a long bus commute there and back to work every day. And
that was the original name of The Hobbit.
Yeah, handhelds gaming is where I can do a lot of what I get to do for fun now. Mm-hmm. So
totally.
If it's on a handheld, if it's on 3DS or it's on Vita, it's a lot more of a chance I'm actually going to play it. This week I'm playing stuff for review, so I'm not playing anything for fun. Last week I played stuff for review. It's been like 3 weeks since I played a game for fun.
I read a blog post recently where a guy's trying to read, it's one of those things where he's trying to read like 52 books a year, just trying to read more. And he says one thing that he does is if he finds himself getting bored with a book or he's not enjoying it, he throws it across the room.
Oh, okay.
And I just thought it's just mentally to be like, it's just kind of this, like, fuck this. I don't need to spend one, like, this is my enjoyment time. This is for me.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, to say, oh, I'm just really trying to get through something. Like, what motivates us to do that? Just stop.
That same, like, you get halfway through a show, and you're like, I just gotta keep watching
it. That was me in True Detective Season 2. I was like, well, I've already watched the first half. Yeah, I guess like, I gotta get through the second half.
But that's what, like, I think throwing it across the room is meant to, like, break you out of, like, it feels good instead of just putting it down where you might feel guilty with, like, the bookmark halfway through.
What if you set it on fire?
Yeah. Set it on fire and throw it at your baby.
It's worth it is worth giving unfamiliar things an effort if you feel like there might be something that you're going to care about.
But sure,
there's some point where you're just like, no.
Look, if you are able to slog through the first fourth of this book, you'll find something incredible. Yeah, like I respect that, but I'm just saying it's your leisure time. Don't feel like you have to get through something. But like I'm done with Batman. I'm replaying Banjo, and I have no guilt about that.
Yeah, absolutely.
No guilt about throwing that flaming book at my baby.
Your baby. Heads up.
You gotta toughen them up.
It is amazing, though, isn't it, that if you have a PS4 and Xbox One, you get 8 free games a month.
Yeah.
That's wild. Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
That's super cool.
All right, before we go this week, it's time for Video Game 20 Questions.
I forget every
week. Don't forget.
Week.
Coming for you.
This is your life now, Justin. Every week, this is your life.
This is your punishment for throwing that fire book.
Yeah. Our suggestion this week comes from Simon in the UK.
What's up, Simon?
You made.
So is it like F1 or like what are the
cricket? Cricket simulator.
FIFA? The FIFA. Chucky Egg.
Are we being awful?
Chucky Egg.
Could be Chucky Egg.
It's a Tandy game, isn't it?
No, it's not. That's a ZX Spectrum.
Chucky Egg. That's a deep cut.
Yeah. It's a pretty good game.
You may begin the questioning.
Is it Chucky Egg?
Is that one of your questions?
Did it come out after January 1st, 2000?
No.
Okay. Is it a console video game?
Yes.
Okay. Is it primarily known for being on a Nintendo console?
No.
Okay. Primarily known for being on a Sony console?
Yes.
Ooh. There we go.
So PS1.
Yeah, it's got to be PS1.
Oh, why does it got to be PS1?
It's before 2000.
Oh, before 2000, of course. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Let's see. Is it a platformer?
It's in the family. It's not a platformer in the strictest sense, but there is platforming.
Ape Escape.
Okay, platforming.
I don't know why I whispered. Is it 2D?
No.
Okay.
It's in the platform family. Do you play as a human?
Yes.
Yes. Okay, so you're a human protagonist. Does the game...
You're not a bandicoot.
Does the game take place on Earth or some video game facsimile of Earth that identifies itself in some way as Earth?
I think so.
Okay. So it's probably not historical or anything like that.
Now I'm a little bit lost. I don't know what to ask.
Human, some platforming, 3D.
Is Ape Escape on Earth?
Well, he didn't say 3D.
He said not 2D, so that would make it.
That was my question. Yeah.
That was his question.
I was too busy looking at that phone by your butt.
All right.
Is it made by a company that's still in business?
Yes.
Oh, there you go.
It's first party.
Oh, yeah, it was it first party?
Yes.
Ooh.
That's 10.
All right.
Ape Escape.
Okay, where does Ape Escape take place? What facsimile?
Well, I mean, that would be
Earth,
like
the Planet of the Apes.
That would be Earthish.
No, it could be, I'm thinking Siphon Filter.
Ooh.
You probably jump. Platformy.
Gabe Logan probably jumps at one point in that game. he hurdles over a low fence.
It's a silly guess.
It's your question.
Oh,
we're doing a nice order.
Oh, I didn't know. You know what? Pass. Go to Justin. I need to think for a second.
I got nothing. What was the last question? You play as a human.
Yeah,
you
play as a human.
What was the last question?
Sword of Earth. First party.
First party.
Yeah, it's first party game. Okay.
I don't know. I got nothing either.
Do you use guns?
Not. Really?
It's not a game where you're using guns all the time.
Not a traditional video game.
Do you capture apes in this game?
Yes. You could have had it at 6.
Yeah.
At 6.
Is it Donkey Kong?
No, but wait. Is it a sequel?
No.
Is it Ape Escape?
Yes.
Nice
table. 14. Yeah, you could have. So that's. I think it's on Earth, right? I just couldn't. I didn't know if it was like in space.
I don't think that game's on Earth at all.
No.
Was that the like debut Earth. Of Analog Control?
The DualShock. Yeah.
That was their game for the DualShock. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if it was literally the first one, but that was the first.
I think it was.
Like.
And
was it
really? And you asked if there's a gun. There's probably like
a water gun.
Yeah, we got something like that. Ape Escape's real good. Ape Escape is one of the games I keep wanting to come back.
I'm going to fess up. I've never played Ape Escape. I mean, I know what it is, but I've never played it.
Apes have not escaped yet. Remember Cookies and Cream?
Yeah. That's weird. Yeah,
it was a game where you used both analog sticks to control two characters.
I don't remember that one.
They re-released Resident
Evil.
Early PS2
game.
They released the Resident Evil with dual analog controls.
I remember.
There was like four versions of the first Resident Evil.
Yeah, we're going to rank all the Resident Evil ones.
Rank all the Resident Evil ones?
Yeah. There's a lot of Resident Evil ones.
That last one was pretty good.
Yeah.
All right, that's all the scoops we have for this week. Remember, you can always reach us at the email address, gamescoop@IGN.com. Thank you, Justin. Thank you, Marty. Thank you, Jared. My name is Damon. This is IGN Gamescoop, and we're out.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz and how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.